Hi, ladies. Welcome to the Olives and Arrows podcast, where we discuss women's health, marriage, fertility, pregnancy, birth, motherhood, and much more from a biblical worldview. While we might not agree on every theological issue, we are unified in the truth of the gospel and recognize that this cannot be separated from our experiences. It's a gift to be able to share these things with you today. I pray that you will be encouraged and that God will be glorified. Keep in mind that the things we discuss are personal experiences. You may relate to the information, but every woman's body is different. You should always discuss your health and wellness practices with a trusted healthcare provider. Please note that on this podcast, we do discuss details regarding our bodies that you might want to discuss with your kids before they hear them on our show. With that in mind, let's get started. Today's episode covers part two of our birth story. If you haven't listened to part one, we recommend checking that out first. I do want to give a warning that today's episode does cover some aspects of our birth story that might not be considered ideal, and we recognize that if you're currently pregnant or squeamish, this might be one to skip. With that said, let's dive in where we left off. So we get checked in, and the room that we had hoped for was open at the birth center, so that was really cool. Mm-hmm. For those of you who aren't familiar with birth centers, usually it's basically a group of suites that you can have. So sometimes they're a little bit different, or like there's one with just a shower or one with just a bath or whatever it may be. And so the one that we really wanted had a nice big tub kind of and a nice shower. Yeah. And they have like these beautiful beds, and it was amazing. Yeah. Like the aesthetic was important to us because, you know, you're going to be doing like the hardest thing of your life.
Being in a calming environment.
Yeah. And like the most exciting thing that you've ever been through. Yes. So, we got checked in and, you know, just got comfortable. And something that's really unique about birth centers and home births is that they don't restrict on eating or drinking during labor. Mm-hmm. And so we were just like snacking and walking around. And
she had made a playlist of Christian music and stuff like that.
Worship songs. Music, yeah.
That played pretty much the whole time mm-hmm. in the background. And that was super encouraging, I think, for both of us, especially in the hard moments, just to have that going on in the background.
Yeah. So like my doula and the midwives and my mom and us would be like, you know, singing the songs that were on, or just like, I don't know. It was just like such a holy and like beautiful labor process. And, something that was interesting about my labor is that I was pretty much silent up until the pushing stage.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by that?
I didn't have a huge point of reference for it, but mm-hmm. I mean, you were fantastic. Like you kept it together. And even during the pushing phase, it was more like roaring than like there was no whimpering or anything.
Yeah.
Like, with no judging the whimperers out there, but
yeah, if you need a whimper away.
If ever, I would die. So, you know, I have no room to judge.
Anyways, so yeah, basically we did just lots of walking up and down the hall. Mm-hmm. I was the only person there when we checked in. And so, we really had like the whole birth center to labor in, and, which was really cool because there were no fetal monitors or anything hooked up to me. Like, I was just walking around wearing like my sundress that I had gotten there in, and the midwife would like come up and, you know, stick the Doppler under my dress and check on Garner's heartbeat. And just through all of that, it was so surreal more than anything. And, you know, our doula was showing Andrew like some pain measures to help with just the labor process, like the hip squeezes. Yeah. Dave, I think you like became the Hulk that day, squeezing my hips all day long.
Yeah, my arms were so sore after.
Yeah, seriously.
Gentlemen, if ever you need a good workout, find a pregnant woman to squeeze their hips during birth.
Not in a weird way. Like, yeah, do it to your wife.
Yeah, don't be a perv.
But yeah, don't be a weirdo. Anyways, but yeah, so that was, I think that was like the number one pain reliever for me was those hip squeezes.
Yeah, it really seemed to relieve a lot.
Yeah, because when your pelvis is like squeezed, it like opens up basically like the pelvic floor to allow the baby to like descend further. So yeah, you're helping move along labor, but it also brings so much relief.
Yeah.
And like that round ligament pain.
It was helpful for me as well, just to have a task.
Yes, like something to measure.
Seeing her in pain and going through this and not having a point of reference for what was going to happen other than just knowing what birth is and what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not having sat in on a birth before, having something to do and to make myself busy helped me kind of process through it as well and not, you know, panic whenever you're seeing your wife in such pain, and not really being able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was helpful.
Yeah. So then, after lots of walking around, the midwife kind of, and our doula also suggested that we kind of try to rest where we could. Mm-hmm. And, so they recommended that I go ahead and get in the tub, and I definitely wasn't ever married to like a birth on land or a birth in the water. Like, I think I just didn't want to be attached to anything like that. And so we definitely saw the tub as like a nice opportunity for pain management, but, it was not really for me. Honestly, my contractions got even more intense when I got in the water.
It was surprising, like, especially having done some research into
and listened to 1,000 podcasts.
Yeah. Most people, that's a very relieving experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
And ordinarily, like, that's kind of where the main event happens. Mm-hmm. And, that was not the case.
Yeah. So for some reason for me, it like just made things much more intense. I don't know if it was like, I just felt more comfortable standing or like kneeling than I did kind of laying back. Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering, maybe it took you kind of out of that adrenal state. Like your adrenaline was going during the other stuff because of the intensity, and maybe that kind of helped you power through it. But relaxing maybe brought you down a little bit to where you're more conscious of
what it was feeling
and everything like that. So that's just a theory.
That's so wise.
It's not.
It is.
That's not based in science. That's just my brain.
I don't know. I never thought about that until this moment. I think that's probably very accurate. But I, got out of the tub after probably 45 minutes to an hour.
Not too long.
Yeah. And I started getting that like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom feeling. And I was so nervous that like, I wasn't going to be able to go to the bathroom before he was born, because I had always heard, like, maybe TMI, I don't really care, but I had always heard like the first number two after birth is like terrifying. And so I wanted to get it out of the way before he was born. Like during labor, I'm like thinking about this, so silly. But I went to the bathroom, and when I stood up from the toilet, my water broke.
Yep.
And that was crazy.
It was crazy.
The sound, the splash.
It was very distinct. Like,
yes.
Yeah. It was very strange.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so strange. And so once my water broke, that was like the transition stage kind of starting. Mm-hmm. And it got so intense. And by that point, I was probably having contractions like every 2 minutes when I was in the tub and stuff. But after that, and like I said, my contractions never normalized. So it might have been 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and then 1 minute or whatever. And so after that, it was just like they were just one on top of the other. Yeah, like I never felt like there was really relief. And so our midwives suggested that I get in the shower to labor, which is where I spent most of the rest of the story.
Yeah.
So in the shower, Andrew was instructed to just point the water at my back and basically like move it a little bit, like, and that brought so much relief, like, yeah, just having that hot shower head on my back, because like the back labor at that point was very intense.
Mm-hmm. Loosening things up a little bit with the
heat. Yeah, totally. And
even just having the different sensation to kind of distract, I think.
For sure, for sure. So if you can like visualize it, I was in the corner of the shower. They had given me like these pad things for my knees. And so I was like on my knees, and there was this like kind of teak bench, mm-hmm, and I had my elbows up on the bench. And so I was kind of like on my knees, elbows up on the bench. And I was like pushing my chest forward, like into the ground almost. And yeah. And my head was like between my arms. So I actually like definitely injured my back because, yeah, I was like straining so hard and like pushing down. But it was the only thing that brought relief, that like water on my back and just like that pushing motion.
Yeah.
So that's when like my roaring started, yes, I would say, because I felt like super pushy by that point. And I really tried to not push for as long as possible, mm-hmm, because I know like, okay, the fetal ejection reflex, like the longer you can go until you push, like the more likely your body is going to push for you.
Right.
And so I think I waited for that, but I don't know. I mean, this is our first baby, so I don't
feel like, I don't know. Obviously you have a better insight into that because, mm-hmm, it's your body, but I don't feel like you were
pushing. We didn't jump the gun.
No. And I don't feel like you were pushing that long. I mean, like it was a long time, but I don't know. I feel like it
was like the twilight zone. Honestly, like time just stands still,
yeah,
when you start pushing. So you don't know how long you've been pushing. You don't know, like, has this been a long time, a short time, whatever it may be. So we found out afterwards that I actually pushed for like over 2 hours, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like it didn't feel like 2 hours,
no,
but
it didn't.
I mean, through the whole thing, I was just basically in my head, just reciting Psalms, mm-hmm, that I could like call upon. So definitely, like, if you're pregnant, memorize some scripture and just like have it in your head so that like you can really like call on it in that moment. And so I was just like praying and like recalling scripture in my head. And, you know, make no mistake, I was also like thinking curse words in my head too, because it's so hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hard, but so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And like, you know that you're about to meet your baby. And my doula was incredible, and she told us, like, every time you have a contraction, every single push, every single anything throughout birth, just think, I never have to do that push again. Mm-hmm. I never have to have that contraction again, whatever it may be. Like, and just kind of like meditating on God's word and that, and the music that was playing and all of those things, like, was just really powerful and just, yeah, like really helped me get through it. And Andrew was like strong and silent in there. And, you know, if every once in a while he'd tell me like, you're doing so good, like, I'm so proud of you, you're so strong.
Just trying to encourage.
But really, for the most part, like, he was quiet, and that's exactly what I needed. Like,
yeah,
I really needed to focus. And so after a good long while of doing that and pushing in the shower. Oh, I forgot to mention, I was also using nitrous oxide, laughing gas, or whatever you want to call it, as a pain management.
Do you feel like that helped?
I don't know. I mean, I think it kind of helped me dissociate, yeah, from the pain.
Calm down a little bit.
Yeah. So I never felt panicked,
yeah,
during birth, which is a gift, mm-hmm, from the Lord. Yeah, I never felt like birth was something to be scared of.
Yeah.
So, and honestly, I think that's just like, because I was educated on birth, and I just had incredible care providers.
You knew what to expect.
And I knew what to expect. Yeah.
Best case, worst case, you kind of knew.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, very best end of things, this will be it.
Yeah.
The opposite end will be here.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I just really had a strong conviction that like fear would not help me at all.
Yeah.
So anyways, but, the nitrous gas, like, I feel like it did help, me to stay away from that anxiety that can come on, like, if you've been pushing for a long time. So, at that point, we decided to go ahead and have me move, to the bed in the birth suite because, I was, at this point, I had been at a 10 for a while and I was pushing and like, he just wasn't descending enough. So we needed to like kind of change positions and
getting some stability too. Cause
being
on all fours in a shower,
kinda getting where slippy.
It was very slippery and your legs were starting to shake quite a bit and you know, exhausting obviously.
It's like the most intense physical event that you've ever been through in your life.
So not having a surface that feels like it's moving all the time would probably be a good thing at that point.
So, we moved, you know, slowly, like between contractions, like I said, they were just one on top of the other, over to the bed. And, we had one of those peanut balls. And so I was like on my hands and knees again, but like my chest was up on the peanut ball and I could just kind of like rock back and forth on it.
Yeah. You feel like that was helpful?
I do. Yeah, I do. Because I think like being able to stretch forward and then come back, like contract and then like go forward was a chance for my pelvis to just like kind of flex and have that like tension. And it helped Garner like descend even more. The part on the bed, I think only lasted maybe 30 minutes.
Not long. That was the final stretch.
Yeah. And so, we can just talk through that. Those like final moments of pregnancy, I guess. So I could tell that his head was like coming down for sure and about to come on through to the, you know.
We have some very good pictures.
Yeah, those are special pictures. Yeah, and I'm forever grateful for them, but absolutely no one will ever see them besides me and Aaron, Andrew. I didn't say Aaron.
What it sounded like.
Sorry. My other husband's name is Aaron.
Yes.
No. Anyways.
No, Garner will see him once he gets married.
No. Married. So anyways, so those final moments of just kind of like, okay, he's about to come through, were just so insane. And his head was delivered. And then I hear the midwife say, "We've got a big boy here. Go ahead and get in a lunge position, Danielle." And I'm pretty sure my response was like, "What?"
Yeah. A lunge position. Yeah.
That was... So I went from being on my hands and knees to being in a lunge position.
That was as much of a feat as the birth itself.
Like, yeah. Like, and I got into that position really fast. Like,
okay, with a baby's head hanging out of your end.
Hoo-ah.
Yeah. I don't know what we're allowed to say on here. So
we can say vagina, but I feel like hoo-ha is less that? Scary.
Vagina. There we go. It's more refined.
Vaheen.
Yes. With his head hanging out of your vaheen, now lift your leg up by your head and extend your other leg.
Yeah.
That was, yeah.
And so I did. You did. And one push and his body was, out.
Was out. Now, and... how... So you did that all natural.
Yeah.
For if the Lord blesses with another one, do you feel like you're going to want an epidural having done it natural? And for the, he was 10 pounds, 3 ounces.
Yeah. He record. Was huge. No, I do not think that I would want an epidural for the next one. Cause I feel like if I can make it through Garner's birth, surely I can make it through our next baby's birth. Or
it could be a cliche or something like that, but it, generally people say it's easier every subsequent
they do
time, so.
Yeah, I all the midwives would say like you only have to go through your first birth once.
Yeah.
And so I think like hopefully our next baby, it will be an easier experience.
Yes, we will be taking sperm donations from smaller men. I'm 6'6", so he comes by his large size honest. So for our subsequent babies, we will need smaller
men. Want to do a little IUI situation.
Exactly.
No. Anyways, but I love having a big baby because I never felt like he was like too tiny and I was gonna like break him
or no whatever. He's not fragile,
but anyways, so back to that moment. So I got out of my lunge position and they passed him between my legs and I took hold of him and I look at Andrew and then I look at my mom and you're in just a state of like complete like an oxy.
Yeah, exactly,
you're in like this oxytocin like mega dump but adrenaline too. And so I was like, Mom, look at him. And then I looked at Andrew and I was like, babe, can you believe it? Our son. And that was like the most incredible moment of my entire life.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah.
So I clipped his cord. And
that was later. That was later. Yeah. So let's because we did right. delayed cord clamping.
You described it. Okay.
So
it's a blur for me at this point.
Yeah. So. Okay. So the next thing that happened is a little bit crazy. And I will just say like a quick little trigger warning, you know, the rest of the experience did not go the way that we hoped it would. Andrew was fine. Garner was fine. I was fine. My other husband, Aaron, was fine. Just kidding. But everyone was fine, but it was scary for sure. And I'm not going to lie and say like, oh, I was totally calm, cool, and collected the whole time, because I think I was for the most part, but I was really just worried about like,
you're mostly calm because of the blood loss.
Yeah. But I was also worried that like Andrew and Garner were going to be alone.
Yeah.
If something, you know, didn't go right for me. So basically, after I turned over and was holding Garner, I had a massive hemorrhage. And they kind of got the hemorrhage under control through Pitocin. They gave me a shot of Pitocin. And then like a bunch of like homeopathics and stuff like that. And then I really kind of had a second one after that. And so I had a couple of shots of Pitocin. They were doing like all the things that they could do at the birth center. Ultimately, I had a retained placenta. So the baby delivered, but the placenta did not. And so we like had the delayed cord clamping thing and we had planned to like delay for, you know, much longer than we did. But at that point we just needed to like deal with the placenta. And yeah, so
it was a little emergent.
So yeah. So they cut the cord. The blood was crazy. It was like The Shining in that moment. But so don't ever watch that if you haven't seen that movie. But if you have, you'll know what I'm talking about. Anyways. So the midwives both worked on me diligently and I would like stand up and try to push, lay down, try to push. You know, they tried to like manually remove the placenta, all of this stuff. Meanwhile, like Andrew is holding our tiny little naked baby and trying to like figure out how to be a dad for, you know, the first several minutes of his life. I'm like, I cannot be very present because I needed to focus on like the placenta because I was fading quickly. And ultimately, unfortunately, I was not able to deliver the placenta at the birth center, most likely because I was on progesterone my whole pregnancy. It was just like too strong. Like the placenta itself was just too strongly attached to my uterus, and so it just did not want to hang. And so, you know, Andrew, tell us about your experience in that moment.
I mean, I was, like she said, I was holding Garner. rejoicing in that, but also like it was focusing on him, but seeing what was happening to her on the bed. I'm not a squeamish person at all. Blood doesn't bother me or anything like that. Seeing your bleeding wife, with, you know, her blood splashing the walls and stuff like that. You know, that was not a pleasant sight. Mm-hmm. And the midwives did a phenomenal job, with the tools they had available. It was concerning, to say the least. And, you know, I immediately started having thoughts of like, is this going to be it? Like, am I going to be doing this solo? Is she going to be okay? Like, what are we going to do here? And then Garner took a dump down my chest and that kind of helped snap me out of that. And,
sweet boy.
Yeah. So he knew what his dad needed. So,
mm-hmm. A little comedy.
Exactly.
In the midst.
So that brought some levity to the situation. And, mm-hmm. If you've ever had a newborn, that black tar poop is
it's pleasant.
Yes, it is something different. It was intense, to say the least. It was frightening. She ended up getting transported by EMS and taken to one of the hospitals, and me and Garner stayed there at the midwifery place, got the rest of his stuff taken care of.
You know, just in that in between phase where we're like trying to figure out if we're going to be able to get the placenta delivered in the birth center or if we're going to have to get transferred. Andrew really had to focus on Garner, which is exactly what he should have been doing. And, you know, I didn't even have the presence of mind to like think about, you know, I want to hold him or anything like that. So I did get to hold him for a few minutes, but like, once the bleeding got really intense, like I needed to pass him off because I just wasn't comfortable keeping him in my arms.
Yeah, her blood loss was significant enough that she wasn't really able to hold him very well.
Yeah. And as we're talking about this, this is a very rare situation.
Oh, for sure.
This is not a reason for you to feel like you can't do a birth center or can't do a home birth or not anything like that. Because the whole process of like trying to deliver the placenta and like deal with the hemorrhage, it was like over 30 minutes. Like, yeah. It's not like we were like 2 minutes and I would have died or something crazy.
It was specific to her body. The care we received was fantastic.
Yeah.
Obviously the birth went off without a hitch. They did everything they could.
Yeah.
Try to get that taken care of. It was.
And even looking back at it now, I think like, there really was nothing different that they could have done.
No, it would have been the same situation if we had done it anywhere else.
Even a hospital, exactly. It would have been the same situation.
It just, you know, the only difference would have been saving the ambulance ride.
Right. So,
it was a 2-minute ride. So
exactly. Yeah. Deal. 'Cause we were just 2 blocks away from the hospital.
Yeah.
So, ultimately my mom and I, 'cause Andrew was dealing with Garner and just like loving on his son and bonding and having skin to skin and all that sweet stuff. My mom really was my rock in that situation. And we, were just kind of, they were just talking through the options. I really wasn't participating very much in that conversation by that point, but I could nod and stuff and like provide general consent, but ultimately decided to go ahead and transfer to the hospital. So took that 2-minute ambulance ride. They were there within like 45 seconds of calling. Feel like but within a couple minutes
they were there very quickly.
So I transferred over to the hospital, and at the hospital they tried the same thing. Basically they tried Pitocin, they tried to manually remove the placenta, etc. And it didn't work. So ultimately, I ended up with a DNC. Dilation and Cuttage is what that stands for. And basically, they went through the vaginal canal and surgically removed the placenta. And I had to have a couple of blood transfusions during that because I had hemorrhage. And actually, I think that the second hemorrhage I had might have been in the surgery rather than the second one being at the birth center. But honestly, it's kind of a blur. But anyways, had to have a few blood transfusions during the surgery. Had the most incredible OB-GYN at the hospital. She was the OB hospitalist, and she did this surgery, and it was just like, she did an amazing job, and yeah, she
knew her business.
She was so kind, and just like, she was exactly who we needed in that moment. And yeah, so Garner and Andrew eventually came over to the hospital and met me there whenever I got out of surgery. So it was very surreal coming out of surgery, and, you know, my mom was there with me, which was a blessing. And then, you know, going back into, like the labor and delivery suite that they had us in at the hospital, just seeing like Andrew and Garner there, yeah, it was very surreal because it's not what we were hoping for, obviously. Yeah. And, you know, at the birth center, you would stay for a few hours and then you'd go home that same night.
Yeah.
And so having that like major change.
Having to spend a couple days in the hospital was not what we were expecting. And
yeah,
was a little disappointing. Obviously the birth itself went incredibly.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the after part that
kind
of fell apart.
Yeah. But we had so much support.
We did.
We had the best nurses,
yeah.
The best doctors. I mean,
family was always around.
Yes. It was amazing. And
then, you know, some of the rules got bent with the COVID protocols and stuff.
Like, yeah, we did. So a big reason why we wanted an out of hospital birth was because of all the COVID stuff. Like we just didn't want to deal with masks or not being able to have people there and things like that. And they like totally really threw the rules out the window for us.
Yeah, that was,
which I still can't believe.
That was appreciated. They did not have to do that. They probably would have gotten in trouble for doing that, but a few people pulled some strings, and that was very appreciated.
Yeah, so Garner and Andrew were guests at the hospital. Like Garner wasn't even a patient, and so we didn't have any issues with like feeling like they were constantly checking on him or anything like that, which is something that we just wanted it to be hands off with Garner. And so that is what we ended up experiencing still, which was such a gift. And
yeah, we didn't have to fight for consent or anything like that.
No.
It was all, you know, he was our baby, and we had the right to do with him as we pleased, you know,
right.
We didn't not totally. Having people come in and constantly doing stuff was nice.
Was so awesome. And so,
you want to talk about breastfeeding?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's do it. So
like that was a big aspect of
that was another totally.
Yeah,
totally. So breastfeeding is kind of like a good transition into the postpartum period. So really from the very beginning, breastfeeding just didn't pan out how we planned it to. So I had a breast surgery when I was 18 because I had like a big benign tumor removed. It was probably the size of like a small orange.
Pretty substantial.
Yeah, pretty substantial size tumor. And I also had some reconstruction done. Because it was such a substantial thing. And so we were already kind of worried that I wouldn't be able to breastfeed. But I had like good lactation markers at the end of my pregnancy and went to lactation consultants before Garner was born, and everything was looking good. I like had that colostrum before he was born and all of that stuff. Well, when everything happened with the post-birth period with like the placenta and needing surgery, I just immediately really dried up.
Yeah.
And I mean, I never had like that letdown feeling or anything like that you hear about. So I had lactation consultants at the hospital trying to help me latch Garner on.
Well, and I think
Did lots of pumping.
Yeah. Whenever I was holding Garner during that little interim period, he was trying to nurse on me.
Yeah. Well, so because I think what happens is that there's that like
instinct.
There's that instinct, and they do this like breast crawl mm-hmm. thing. And that should have happened yeah. with me, but because I was situation. Bleeding out, yeah. we just didn't have that opportunity. And they call that the golden hour yeah. when the baby is put on mom and not separated from mom for an hour. Well, because of the situation and the Lord is truly sovereign in all of it, it didn't happen. Yeah. And so I just dried up. And I mean, within the hospital, I was like syringing like little drops of breast milk that was coming out like mm-hmm. of the hospital grade pump. Like I was getting nothing.
Yeah.
And so about 4 days after Garner was born, he just wasn't resting well. Obviously we could never get him to like latch. He just didn't understand that like latching on equals food because I just didn't have enough of a supply.
Yeah.
And so I pumped every 3 hours for 5 weeks, 6 weeks.
And just to get him the nutrients he needed, we'd started him on formula.
Yeah. That point, so that's what I was going to say is that about 4 days after he was born, we took him to the doctor, and I mean, he was a chunky boy, so it was never at a dangerous point, but he had lost a little bit more weight than they wanted him to lose. And this is a pediatrician that I really trust. And so we ended up starting formula. And that was like kind of heartbreaking for me, not because formula is heartbreaking, but because I was so committed to breastfeeding.
And for a couple months after that point, we were still supplementing his formula with what you were able to pump.
Yes. Yes. So, about 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
I was still pumping. And I mean, for 6 weeks, every 3 hours, I was getting like maybe half an ounce.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while, I'd get like this crazy good 2 ounces yeah. or yeah. something like that. And I thought that was like
good pump,
yeah. a great pump, which, you know, is not a great pump comparatively, but, yeah. You know, just tried all the things, tried all the supplements, talked to all the lactation consultants, and I did everything right, you know, and it just did not happen. And, yeah. you know, we had several trusted providers say like, it is because of what happened after the birth. Like, yeah. you know, it wasn't surgery. It wasn't anything. It was so much blood loss, so much, you know, blood transfusions, trauma. Things like that. Yeah. Trauma. Exactly. So, that was really hard, but honestly, like it was just another reminder of God's sovereignty.
Yeah. It was
it was so humbling.
You really had to trust the Lord.
Yeah.
And put Garner before yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like the realization of like, okay, well, he needs these nutrients. So if the best way for him to be taken care of, and if he's sleeping better
yeah,
with a meal of formula rather than us trying to do like, all right, we're going to do formula and then supplement it with this.
Yeah.
Well, that just upsets him.
Yeah.
So like what's best for him at the end of the day. And it was hard for you because there's almost kind of a mommy shaming thing that happens out there sometimes with certain people.
Communities.
Yeah. Who, if you're not breastfeeding, you're hurting your child, or right. you're not adequately providing for your child, or you're not as good of a mother as
yeah.
other people. And yeah. I think personally from the outside looking in, obviously I'm not a mom, so, you know, I'm not a woman, so I don't have the perspective, but from the outside looking in, it seems to just be petty people trying to make themselves feel more important because they can do something other people can't.
Well, and it definitely can be that, but I also think like we can objectively recognize that breast milk is uniquely
100%. It's a beautiful thing designed by God to give him all the nutrients he needs.
And it's uniquely beneficial in a way that other things cannot be. And so we recognize that.
I think I speak from it with some bitterness, just seeing how that culture really hurt you and how it was such a hang up for you and really hurt your self-worth in your own eyes, because you felt like you were failing in some sense. Whereas from my perspective, you were doing everything possible to take care of our son. And that's the most beautiful thing you could be doing. It doesn't matter where his food source is coming from.
And like I said, it was just the Lord's sovereignty, because I have been able to take that experience and encourage other moms since then. And encourage other moms like who lose their supply, or encourage other moms who, you know, are having a low supply, and I can encourage them toward like increasing it, like both ways, you know. And I think like if I didn't have those people who said to me, Danielle, taking 30 minutes or, you know, however long to pump every 2.5 to 3 hours, 24 hours a day, like you're killing yourself to do this and you're missing all this time, like that you could be enjoying your baby. Do you feel like you're enjoying your baby?
Right.
And for me to have to be like, well, not really, you know, it was like,
I'm too busy to enjoy my baby.
Well, and just, I enjoyed him and I adored him and we had so many like sweet times, but I never rested with him. Like I didn't.
No, you didn't have time to.
I didn't have time.
And, well, and talk about postpartum depression, like that really drove that.
That really kicked in because of that whole thing. And so once we, you know, with a lot of prayer, decided to stop pumping and stop trying to latch him on and stuff. After we stopped that, I enjoyed Garner and rested with Garner,
and he thrived.
Thrived,
like,
because what he had was sustenance from the formula, and make no mistake, we got him on some really good formula, because I'm a avid researcher, and you know, we were blessed enough to be able to provide that for him, praise God. So he was thriving because he was not hungry and he was getting great nutrients. But he was also thriving because his mom was available to him.
It was doing better.
Was like, doing so much better. Yeah. I mean, I was finally like out of just that dark cloud, and able to like hold my baby and not be just filled with anxiety about, okay, on my next pump, will I be able to get anything to give to him?
Yeah.
Like that was so... That's such like a desperate place that, I mean, you think about like those feelings of as an adult or as a kid or whatever, where's my next meal going to come from? I was thinking about that for Garner, and I felt like the sole responsibility of it.
What a blessing that, you know, there are formulas out there.
Yes. Like, that you can literally go to a store and have a way to feed your infant.
Yeah.
Like that is, that is, throughout all of history has not been available up until the last like couple of decades.
No, historically, like if this were an issue, it could be a life or death situation.
Absolutely.
So the fact, or, you know, especially people didn't have money or resources to have a wet nurse or something
elite.
Like that.
Yeah. Yes.
So the fact that that's something that's so widely available, I mean, even gas stations have formula.
Yes. Like, yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. And, you know, he's happy, healthy, he's bright. He's so, so smart.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, he's doing great. So
yeah. Well, and you know, maybe eventually I'll do an episode on like breastfeeding, formula feeding, etc., and you know, help give resources to moms who they're in that same position and they're like trying to figure out what formula to feed or whatever it may be. I'm happy to share our experience with that. But anyways, yeah, so that kind of like leads into the next thing that we can talk about is what has parenthood been like outside of what we've already said?
Yeah. It's been crazy. I mean, it's been so much fun. Colic was real. That was...
We did go through a colic stage.
Yeah. Life kind of fell apart for a second there.
Totally.
Because once we got back home, how long would you say we were in our house before we...
6 weeks.
We were in our house for 6 weeks and then had a freak accident of a pipe bursting just randomly. It didn't even freeze or anything like that. It just burst under the sink. We were out for 20 minutes, came back, and the whole house was flooded.
Yeah.
We proceeded to spend the next 10 weeks mm-hmm. with our 6-week-old in a hotel.
Yeah.
And that's when the colic struck.
Yeah.
So
we were in a hotel room for 10 weeks, starting when Garner was 6 weeks old. So once we got out of the hotel, Garner had been earthside in a hotel for longer than he had in our home. Oh my goodness. It was crazy. But I mean, even in that, the Lord provided and, you know, we were able to like restore our home and praise God that we didn't have to like take a massive loss or something like that.
When insurance covered all the hotel stuff. That was a blessing.
Yeah.
But no, yeah. Parenthood was intense to say the least in the midst of that. And, you know, I work nights for the agency I work with. So I'm gone 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. several nights a week. Mm-hmm. So Danielle having to cope with, you know, a colicky baby.
And postpartum depression.
In a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, we're thankful for the hotel. I will not say it was the nicest hotel that there is. So that was difficult as well to not even really feel like comforted by the place you're staying.
Yeah.
But you know, it was a lot to deal with for a little bit.
Yeah. We truly were just bare and asking the Lord for our daily bread. Like,
yeah, lots of prayer in that time.
Yeah. It brought us so low, but I think that it has been basically nothing but beneficial for us
100%.
Since then. Wouldn't you agree?
I completely agree. Yeah. It's, you know, it was a difficult circumstance, but I feel like it's made us stronger. It's made us better parents. It's given us more patience. Mm-hmm. It's definitely brought us closer to the Lord.
Yeah. I think it makes us uniquely thankful for everything that we have now.
Yes. Yeah. We've
just having more than one room.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for real. Yeah, no, it's been great. We're back in our house now, thankfully, which has been so sweet. Garner getting to sleep in his nursery and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sleep training has been interesting.
Yeah, that was a hard decision. That was...
You could probably have a whole episode on that.
Obviously. Yeah, and I definitely plan to. I mean, we had always kind of envisioned like co-sleeping until he was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not really, but you know, co-sleeping for a long time and all of that. But our little independent guy, he just didn't want to sleep with us anymore.
No.
And he was not sleeping well at all.
Well, and it felt very counterintuitive of like, you know, he's crying, so let's rock
let's
him and
snuggle
stuff like
him.
That.
Yeah.
And snuggle up on him. He didn't want it.
He didn't want it.
It's not like he's affectionate when he wants to be affectionate, but like...
Yeah, he's an affectionate kid for sure.
Yeah.
But
when it comes to comforting him, like when he's tired and stuff like that...
He just wants to sleep.
He wants to be in his own space.
Yeah.
And we kind of realized pretty quick, because we were trying the co-sleeping thing. He's not...
He's not into it.
He's not resting well.
No.
Like, he'd be up sometimes every 30 minutes, I felt like.
Oh. Yeah. Especially through the colic stage.
Yeah. So we started sleep training, basically feeding him, putting him down in his crib, setting a 5-minute timer.
So we can't tell all the tricks because it's,
sorry.
You got to take a course.
Okay. TM.
Yeah. Taking care of babies.
Never
take
mind.
Her course.
Yeah.
We can't tell you everything because that's how she makes a living.
Intellectual property. Got it. Got it. Okay. Well, yeah. Research on your own.
Yes.
But it works.
Gentle. We'll, gentle sleep training.
We will say that it 100% works.
Testimony. Not cry it out.
No, not cry it out. Do your research.
Yeah.
But no, it works a lot. It just got to the point that we'd be walking around, especially when we were in the hotel, we'd be marching him around the halls in the hotel, rocking him.
You're and, like the mascots.
And he would be, yeah, for real. And he would be screaming. And like, we'd go outside. We'd have to go outside the hotel just to get him some fresh air because something about being outside was calming to him.
Mind you, it's August in Texas.
Yeah.
Which, so it's 1,000 degrees outside.
Mosquitoes everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point that it wasn't doing him any good. It wasn't doing us any good. We were burnt out. He was burnt out. So it's like, why are we spending, you know, sometimes 2 hours on our feet, marching him around, trying to rock him.
Just trying to get him to sleep initially.
Whenever, as soon as we did the gentle sleep training stuff.
He slept through the night.
within a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
I'll say that. I won't give specific time hacks or anything, mm-hmm. but within a matter of minutes, he would be asleep and then he'd sleep through the night and only wake up to get changed.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of our most recent
major game changer
adventure. What do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, starting him on food has been another huge thing.
That's been recent, and he loves bison.
He loves food. Yeah, he loves bison and beef. So we love the Serenity Kids. Serenity Kids, if y'all are out there and you want to sponsor our podcast, get on it because we love y'all.
Yes, you're awesome.
Yeah, so
we do that. He's not eating. We're not plains people. He's not eating whole buffaloes, bison, anything
like
that.
No,
if only. The mush, which is.
Yes, the mush is great.
It's a struggle for me.
Andrew doesn't love the mush.
No, as a cop, you see a lot of crazy things. I think the mush is probably the craziest thing I've seen. And it's the one thing I can't cope with.
Yeah.
So Danielle does a lot of those feedings. I just do the formula.
Yeah, we're taking kind of like a hybrid approach of like baby-led weaning combined with like the Weston A. Price kind of like traditional foods.
It's been going well.
Yeah.
It's been good for his digestion and stuff.
Totally.
Too.
He loves it.
Yeah. His tummy's been a lot happier since we've been doing that. So.
For sure. Yeah. And he's, outside of like eating and sleeping, he's just so smart. Yes. And he's just the most like joyful little kid. And he's so interactive. Oh my goodness. He is always smiling. And he's very opinionated. Like you can tell what he's like thinking and feeling. And I love that about him.
Yes.
He's so sweet and just like adorable. Like he looks like a Gerber baby. Yeah,
he's got those good cheeks.
Yeah. That like classic baby look.
Yeah. He definitely took after his mom. He got his dad's giant ears.
Stop. And they're my favorite. He's so beautiful.
He's incredible. He's the absolute best part of our lives.
And, yeah.
It's just such a blessing.
Yeah, he's like equally like a daddy's boy and a mama's boy.
Yeah, I feel like I will say it, and I know it was hard for Danielle, but a blessing for me in a way. Her not getting that
golden hour.
Him and I got that golden hour, and yeah.
Y'all have a unique bond.
I don't know any of the science of it or anything like that, but I do believe that we bonded in a very special way during that time. And y'all have bonded equally as uniquely.
Yeah.
As well. But,
yeah,
it's let us, both you and I, have very special interactions with them that mm-hmm. are just unique to each of us.
Yeah, totally. I feel like he's like dad's little adventure buddy and mom's little like love bug.
Yeah, we definitely go on lots of little forest walks together and stuff. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we live pretty close to a state forest, so we're blessed by that. But I think that there's more we can go into like in future episodes as far as like getting into the nitty gritty of some of these things. But sure. I think that's really it, y'all.
I mean, do you have any parting advice before we, you know, I feel like we've said a few things, but.
Yeah. I think my parting advice would be, first of all, if you haven't trusted your life to Christ, that you get on that, because life is incredibly unexpected and, you know, eternity is a long time.
Yeah.
And
read the book of Romans. If you're looking for a place to dive in just to get the gist of what we believe.
Yeah.
Read the book of Romans.
Totally. Yeah. And just as a general, can you give us a general little gospel message, babe?
Yeah. I mean, we're all sinners, and we're all unable to save ourselves. I think the world is very, I think a message that gets passed around a lot is if you're good enough, you'll be saved and you'll go to heaven or whatever version of heaven you believe in. And I think Christianity stands unique in the fact that it's the only religion out there that says you can't be good enough, but somebody else was good for you. And mm-hmm. God, the God of the Bible, is the only God that really breaks from human design. I feel like you look at a lot of other religions and, the gods that they worship are very human in their design. And I feel like the God of the Bible, doesn't think like we do.
Mm.
And that just makes me think he's not made up by a man.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're sinners. We need a savior. And rather than letting us face the punishment that we deserve for our sins, he loved us enough to die on the cross for us, to give his son as a sacrifice to pay for our sins. And if we trust in him and trust that his sacrifice was sufficient, he's good to keep his promise and save us. And we get to have eternity with him.
Yeah.
So
turning from our sin is so hard.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're in, you know, you're never going to be perfect this side of heaven. You know, it's not like, well, if I'm just good enough, then, you know, but he's good for us, and he sanctifies us every day and draws us closer to him. And when we fail, he goes out and finds us and picks us back up. So, you know, that's the best way I can put it.
Yeah. So I would say the gospel is the main thing.
Yeah.
And all other wisdom flows from that truth.
Yeah.
So
other than that, have kids, keep having kids.
Yeah. Get married, have kids, be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I love you.
I love you too. And we love y'all.
Yes.
I truly hope that today's episode was an encouragement to you. I pray that you will give thanks to the Lord because of his righteousness. Please subscribe, share, and leave a rating for this podcast. I could not do this without you. See you next time.